Okay, so this evening I'd like to offer some reflections on the theme of compassion. And as many of you know, this is my Brahma Vihara play month. Hopefully there'll be some benefit to all of us. And I think very much offering some thoughts and memories and images and teachings with the encouragement to you to, you know, take it or listen lightly, see what might be helpful, if anything, and that sense of not needing to necessarily, kind of get hold of bits and pieces and chew on it. But perhaps just by reflecting a bit together. I know in this situation I'm doing the talking and there's a listening more on your part, but hopefully it can still be a kind of conversation. And it's very interesting, and the sense of how we listen in a situation like this, where we're really, and I just can feel very moved by the depth of your practice and a huge respect for, you know, the presence and the things that you're working with, and the sense of what you, of sort of what's in the room, what's in the field, you know, and so kind of wanting to bow to your wisdom and always commend you to your own wisdom and discernment in the listening. I always feel like there's real benefit of just being present and listening and noticing what is resonant, what, you know, touches your heart or your body, or as you listen, a particular story or word or just something about being here, you know, with others, this sort of gathering together. So maybe we can explore together. You know, I think there's always more to understand about anything. Particularly these great Dharma themes. You know, I was talking to people, and with one person saying, you know, it's all very well talk about metta, kindness, and compassion, and then, you know, you're excuse me. No, you're in a bit of a state, and you just think, how the heck, you know, how do I bring compassion in here? It's not so obvious. So, and I feel that's very true in the world as well, when we're, you know, outside of retreat and whatever we're engaging in. And sometimes it's really, really challenging. And, you know, the practice, the exploration continues. How do I stay kind of connected with what matters to me, which, you know, for me anyway, kindness and compassion, that matters a lot. And sometimes it's not so easy to stay connected with that. So just the respect for that being, like for me, I have a lot of faith in that possibility of it being really genuinely available and potentially present and informing our choices and our actions, you know, sort of continuously. I suppose that's a kind of an aspiration of a kind. But also very aware of the, you know, the gaps and the sense of certain areas of experience, you know, areas of our life where it's just somehow really hard to open to that or find that, or sort of how does that, you know, embrace this situation, or, you know, all of that. So, you know, like the sense of compassion, like with all the great qualities, a sense of it being joined in some way with wisdom, so that there's a way in which it does morph and change, almost like change shape, you know, so that there's the sense of appropriateness, and this is how it looks or feels or embodies or expresses itself here, and you know, it can look very different according to the conditions. And I think, yeah, that's takes a lot of clarity about the basic intentionality here, you know, to care, to the wish to be able to be present with and respond to suffering in helpful ways. But, you know, how that actually, you know, that sensitivity to conditions, isn't it, to actually allow an appropriate response to come forth. And that involves also encountering the sort of inner and outer obstacles of many kinds, so that it's sometimes I think it takes a lot of courage to stay with that, a lot of courage and clarity. So I have various things I thought to share, and it's like I'm not quite sure. Some different ideas about what to share and how to proceed. I think I'm going to, let's see what happens. Hopefully this might be helpful. But I've been very much with the sense of exploring the remembering and imagining of situations where care is being given and received, and that I find that a very helpful doorway, or like it feels to me like a cultivation of compassion, a sort of inclining or of the mind, or a sort of tuning of the heart. And for me, it seems very helpful to kind of focus on include like a sense of that dynamic, that really, you know, we're relational beings, right? It's kind of the sense of how compassion arises in relationship, and that's something we can actually sort of find in our meditation, in the way that perhaps we're cultivating the compassion in a meditative way, where we may not be interacting with an actual person in front of us, but it's still a relational thing. So I was remembering my first therapist a long time ago, and I was really remembering her with a lot of appreciation and the sense of how, you know, as a fairly young person with a lot of distress and confusion, and being met in this, you know, now I would have the perspective with a lot of metta, karuna, a lot of kindness and compassion, and how I just like thirsty, just drank it up, you know, and literally, because one of the parts of the ritual was I would go to her house, and she had two little girls, and so it was like this for me wonderful, like, wow, there's a family, you know, they seem happy, wow, you know, that's the teaching. That's an encouragement. It is possible. So there were a lot of, I won't go through all the different things that were so helpful about going there, but one of them was a little ritual where she would offer me a cup of tea, and I would say, yes, please. So I would go upstairs, would sit in this huge old armchair, which I call my pit of despair chair, because that's a lot of what I was with for a while. And then she would bring this cup of tea, some kind of herbal tea, and it was really, really big cup. It was a really big cup on a big saucer. So the whole sort of proceeding was like slightly like, you know, she'd bring it in, and then what sort of, it would be on this side, it would put it on there. It was on this big armchair, you know, it'd be like, and then there, it somehow was a little wobbly, but it was okay. And then I would, you know, be drinking the tea, and just this sense of being taken care of. And also I realized this afternoon, thinking about this, that there's something also very, and again I won't go on about this all evening, but you know, there's a lot of symbolic kind of metaphorical, whatever, simile type, you know, things that might kind of, now I see, wow, there was a lot in that cup, not just tea. Yeah. And in her wisdom, she sort of helped to maintain this ritual. And I was thinking, one thing it was communicating to me, it was like this sort of combination of care and fragility, right? You know, because it could fall off and they can break quite easily, can't they? That. So I thought, yeah, and the kind of teeteringness slightly, you know, it's like it's not quite, and yet there's all this sort of warmth and nourishment sort of coming from it as well, and care. And I think that's very, like, somehow resonant with the sense of compassion, of being sort of this care, but also a real kind of sense of the vulnerability and the fragility and the wobbliness, and, you know, I'm not really together, and I'm not together at all, or, you know, that's welcome and supported. So my sense of her, you know, I was reflecting today, is like she really, obviously I'm not, she wasn't a saint, you know, again, not trying to idealize her, but these two sides, or these two aspects of compassion, I wanted to kind of draw out a little bit. So there's a sense of being listened to, right? Maybe I hope you've all had the good fortune to experience this in your life, of being genuinely listened to. It's, you know, maybe not as common as we might hope. And how powerful that is. You know, how much it's almost like, at some level, that's all we really need. Or some part of you that feels like, yeah, that's, you know, just stay and I'll, you know, so much can happen. So much healing, and, you know. And I think that's such a good metaphor, or some simile or something, for meditation practice, and what the kind of presence, or again the dynamic that we can find in the how that we are with ourselves, where we can begin to feel almost like mindfulness, awareness is like a deep listening. A deep listening that's not devoid of compassion. And that's something I wanted to touch on a bit. Just the, you know, whatever practice you're doing, there's probably some awareness involved, right? Anybody not? I want to know if that's the case. I would be very interested in that. So, practicing here without awareness. Okay, tell me about that. but this sense of, yeah, the presence, and how some of us have had to really learn that, or we're still learning it, how to find that sort of within our own mind, our own heart, our own presence, you could say. You know, and it's like, wow. Yeah, we can find it when we're with others, or, you know, we're talking, or we're, you know, if we're the one offering, then it's often easier. Like I was thinking about how, what an amazing compassion practice it is to meet with you individually, you know, when we have our one-to-ones. And how this sense of this receptive part, you know, the listening, and then the responsive part, something like comes up to sort of say or share or offer, or like a, oh, you could try this, or, oh, that makes me think, you know, a response. And maybe you have this in, you know, you know this from your own life, your own experience, where there's a, again, different relationships or situations or work or whatever it is. It might even be, you know, artistic endeavor, or I think it can come up in all sorts of ways where there's this sense of deep, deep listening, and then there's a response as well. And what I don't know how it is for you, but I do hear this from different people, that it's so much harder to find it sort of internally. That is, you know, say a high practice or something, I don't know what that means exactly, but you know, it's not, and it can really be quite elusive, or, you know, all these patterns of suffering that can so often be associated with harshness and judgment and avoidance, and maybe all of those sorts of things that we, you know, may be experiencing more in relationship, and even, you know, God forbid, sometimes acting out. Oops, sorry, let's try not to do that again. But, you know, that process of kind of being kind of carried away or led by these other forces, these other energies, these other patterns and habits that kind of come forth when there's suffering, that then they're not so helpful, they can perpetuate the suffering and the causes of the suffering. And so let's see, I think I kind of lost where I was going with that for a minute. What was I going with that? So there's the sharing, the offering and the receiving, and the seeing that happen in your life, and then when you're in retreat, right, I think this is, you know, it's like you've got all those people in your head. So, oh dear, isn't there something like that, that all those relational dynamics and, you know, perceptions of him and her and that over there, and oh dear, and it's like it, then it can feel like fractured sense of self or something like that, and different sort of things start to be in opposition to each other, or there's, you know, me over here and me over there, and they can be seeming to be in conflict, or, you know, there's the me who isn't meditating properly, and then the I that knows how to do it, and it's like, why are you doing that, you know, come on. And so much of that relationality, you know, the me, you, whether it's without, you could say, with another person or people, or whether it's within, you know, with our inner tribes, it's so often marked by, I mean, maybe it isn't, it's different for everybody, of course, but, you know, distrust and harshness and, you know, so much that is unhelpful. It's just, it's like a some sort of strange echo of the past or what's happening in the world right now, you know, because we're not separate from all that. And how to recognize, you know, like I sometimes, when I teach about compassion, I have this little diagram where you put the little dot at the top and it says, ouch. And there's an arrow going one way to all the reactivity and the don't want this and denying and avoid, you know, the whole and kind of the stuff that, you know, the reactions that are so human and we all do it, and there's no judgment, it's just, oh, why can't I stop doing that? You know, it's just become reflexive, habituated, and then I draw the arrow going the other way to compassion. You know, ouch. And then I think I still feel like I'm in kindergarten with this. I don't know, I'm a bit further with metta. You know, it's like I'm just stuck in first grade or something like that. But this sense of order. You know, and it's easier, isn't it, in some situations than others, and with some issues than others. That's like, ouch. can I, you know, find some caring for this? Or am I just gonna keep getting more and more frightened and or angry? I know why I'm laughing, it's not funny really, but oh yeah. So I don't know if that's helpful. Sometimes I'm like, oh, okay, so, and then again it's this, like I was saying earlier, this sort of process of, well, how does that, what might support that right now? Oh, okay, you know, and then some kind of creative response. Because it might not be what worked yesterday or last week, you know, so allowing for some creativity, sort of trying some things out. Or just pausing around that. You know, there's a meditation that I think comes from Kristin Neff and the self-compassion kind of teachings. And I just say, this hurts. No, I found this really, I use this sometimes, and it's so simple, it's really helpful. It can cut through some of the complexities and the reactivities. This hurts, or this is difficult, or ouch, you know? And then everyone experiences this. Everyone. And then, you know, that sense of what does that do? Allowing, you know, again, you could hang out with each of these phrases for a while, or like, you know, work through them and then go back, and that's a kind of everyone. You know, and a bit of me anyway can jump up and say, yep, yeah, it's not like this, it's not as hard as this, you know, mine's much worse, or something like that. Like, they'll never understand, you know, I've got the worst dicker in the world, you know. And then when you start hearing it, you're like, well, yeah, I'm not, yeah, maybe not. And then you think, what is the point of measuring anyway? It doesn't make any sense. Like, what use, you know, is that of really any use at all? And so then the third phrase, which is something about, God, this is my brain. I don't know if it's aging brain, or I blame menopause for everything. Anyway, can I be with this with tenderness? Can I? This hurts. Everyone has this. Is there some possibility of, yeah, caring for this and just opening to that possibility? And I have found, I don't know if any of you know this, that actually it's really helpful, to often find it helpful. And and maybe I'll remember the proper phrase, because I think it's more probably close enough. Can I let this be an opportunity for tender concern? So I like these words, opportunity and possibility. It's not making you do anything. It's just, because that, to me, then that, you know, something feels difficult or painful, and it's like, that just creates a little more space, like a pause, like, could this, you know, you can even have it as a question. Might this be an opportunity for compassion, or whatever words or qualities? Because I think that often, isn't there, the reactivity is like this. You know, it's like, come on, okay, this, that, judge, do, yeah. And so, pause. It allows a bit more mindfulness, and, you know, maybe around what's happening. And these phrases maybe just support the mindfulness. Maybe that's really what they need to do. And then you just make space for something to happen quite naturally. I think for some people who struggle a lot with Brahma-Vihara cultivation, like it's too much like okay, I've got to pump out the metta, the karuna card, it may be fine, may be well, may you be well. Yeah, it feels very dry and mechanical and nothing happens, so why bother? But I think letting it be more quiet and spacious and nothing has to happen is so important because it creates space, and it also, it respects the power of intention. That intention bears fruit. If you have even a moment of, you know, tiny bit of kindness towards yourself, it will have a beneficial result. And even if you don't feel anything in the moment, like I feel this compassion practice, I was just, you know, that this hurts, everyone experiences this. Okay, maybe can this be an opportunity for, okay, being with this in a non-cruel way, to use the Buddha's, you know, the way he does that, just like non-aversive, non-cruel, just hang back a bit. Maybe the helpfulness of that is not, again, it's quiet. It's not like ba-doom. It's like, you know, think, oh, well, that didn't work. I don't feel better. I still feel all wound up. But a space has been found, and that, you know, and that happens again and again, and something starts to grow, something, there's a space of possibility there for the non-reactivity, you know, the non-habitual, the non-reflexive, but not by making anything happen. Does that, I hope that makes some sense. That just seems so important to me. It's like, reminds me of Keats' teaching on negative capability, the great poet John Keats, and the idea of negative capability being absolutely at the source of the poet's gift, of this space of not non-doing, which I know we can try to get to in our meditation, can't we? You know, how do you do that? Can you hear what's going on there? You're trying to do so that sense of doing less. And I think that applies to the Brahmaviharas as well somehow. And just finding the right, you know, the image, the story, the memory, the being that you can bring to mind, it's not complicated. And that's part of how it's so amazingly, like it cuts through a lot of the reactivity and complexity, but it's also very potent, right? So it kind of can, again, create space. And one of my teachers, Christina Feldman, used to say, compassion is just space. Which I think struck me then and still strikes me, that again it kind of resonates a bit with this sense of the space of awareness, or the pausing being somehow maybe not even enabling the compassion. It is already the compassion. It is already compassionate. And that was something else I wanted to touch on, which I think when you're opening up, I mean, so many ways that compassion is cultivated and we don't realize it's happening. Stealth compassion practice. Secret compassion practice. Unconscious compassion practice. Okay, so this is a quote from Joseph Goldstein. So he said, in meditation practice, when we settle back and open to what's happening without aversion or attachment, we're developing compassion. So, and I don't know, maybe to me there's something helpful about that, really realizing that suffering is, that mindfulness is compassionate. You know, that it's like all the Buddha's teachings and practices, that's what it's for. It's for the alleviation and ending of suffering, of dukkha. And that you're already cultivating it and you didn't even know. That's good, isn't it? You don't have to even add anything. And perhaps it's again just more like noticing the kindness of practice. It's a kind action. I think that's... And then in terms of not just the benefit for us, but, you know, the benefit for others. Just another quote from Joseph in this sort of area. The non-seeing of suffering keeps us locked into it. Seeing it, turning towards it, opening to it, allows it to wash through and away. And he makes things sound so clear. I mean, they are clear. So that, again, the sense of seeing, turning towards, pausing with, opening to, softening, widening, as my teacher Ajahn Suchito says a lot, we used to soften and widen. Soften and widen, and you know, isn't that what often we're doing in practice with awareness and with that kind of trying to sort of enhance the inclusivity of it. Like, I was talking to somebody about working with Vedana, and I think this is such a good compassion sort of supportive practice for compassion is the learning to be with what's unpleasant or the unpleasantness of something. That sense of a lot of, as you know, classically the cause of suffering is said to be craving. Well, if you take it really into your intimate experience, don't you? I certainly feel I do. I experience that very regularly. It's like something is unpleasant and I don't want it to be like that. There we are, dukkha and tanha, craving and suffering, dukkha, it's like this. And so practicing being with the unpleasant in a non-reactive way, that's one of my little pithed sort of, you know, portable in your pocket sort of teachings that it sort of seems relevant anywhere and everywhere for any occasion. And my sense is, again, I could say that is compassion. It's a form, a very basic but no less valuable form of compassion than, you know, I mean, maybe that's where we get a bit caught up sometimes with ideals, and I've got to be the Dalai Lama and otherwise I might as well just lie down and die, you know. That's a little dramatic, but, you know, it's like you set this high bar, a kind of perfectionistic or idealistic sense of it, and, you know, that being and I can never, and yet there is a sense of, is it okay to call it ordinary? And that's not insulting. Non-dramatic is a word I used last week about metta. I think this is helpful, especially for those of us who tend to be a bit like, you know, like that way inclined. And we want things to be, you know, like whatever, like a Berlioz symphony or something. If you know that one. And the sort of ordinariness of it, this sort of, I think, is very inspiring to me. And in terms of story and image, you know, that then there can be very inspiring. This is a practice I really recommend. It's like remembering. You go through bits of your life or people you've known or situations and things you've done, things like it's kind of wonderful. It's like you go through and there's all these different things you can remember about compassionate actions that have been done. And some of them are quite small. You know, you could say ordinary. So one very simple story which sort of stayed a lot with me. I grew up with a foster family, and my foster brother for a while was going down to a neighbor's house, and he would carry our neighbor, she was an old lady, and he would every day go down there and carry her up the stairs to bed, and then every morning he would come and carry her back downstairs again. Yeah. And it's not glamorous, is it? It's not, you didn't get the Nobel Peace Prize for it, you know. But does that make it any less important? Any less compassionate? It doesn't, does it? It really doesn't. It's that measureless quality. This is something I find. Not measuring. Measurelessness. So then there's no, is it big? Is it small? It's like, it doesn't really compute. You know, it's not. I just. Measureless. Beautiful and. What would you say? Universal. And so the other story I wanted to tell is a story I've told before, which is a story about a whale that was in the San Francisco Bay that got all tangled up with some fishing net. This is some years ago, and forgive me, I won't remember the story exactly. But for me, as an image, as a teaching on compassion, I go back to it fairly regularly because it's so resonant for me and lots of ways. So there's this big whale and kind of really stuck in the nets, and some local divers go out with their diving equipment. I'm just thinking it might have been someone here. I sometimes wonder about those divers. I'd love to meet one of them. Ask them, like, how was that? What was it like to go and help that whale? Anyway. I don't know all the detail, but they have all their equipment and they swim down into the water and they have cutting equipment. And so the whale miraculously has the common sense. I like to think of whales having common sense, but anyway, just stays still. And the people, they go around and they snip the net. And the whale stays still, and then they get the net off, and then I imagine them all kind of going back a bit to give the whale some space, and then the whale swam round to each of the divers. This gets me every time. And just paused and looked at each of them. Had eye contact with each diver. Say, I don't know, you know, just something so beautiful about that. And then swam away. Thank you. Thank you. And who knows, I mean, that would, if I ever met one of those divers, I would, like, what was that like? Yeah. And I feel like that really resonates, that theme of giving and receiving. And that we're offering and sometimes we're receiving and sometimes, like, everybody's offering and everybody's receiving. It's like, I don't know, it's maybe sometimes that whole sense of you and me, and it's like that falls away. And something about that story evokes that sense of oneness, or a sense of you know, we, or just common humanity, or in this case, common sentience, or common mammalianness, you know, our mammal or fellow mammal friends, kin. So, where are we? So, compassion, reflections, teachings, story, memory, image, phrases. So there's a lot of possibilities, right? It's a very rich field, very rich toolbox. And another sort of modality I'd like to mention, which is connected with image, which I also mentioned last week, I think, is the creative expression as a cultivation of metta or karuna, compassion. You know, that, and I have a poem to share, but I think this works for music and other forms of writing and dance, and you know, that there can be a way that through the creative expression there is a healing, and there is an understanding. No, there is a, yeah, I mean, there's a compassion that is cultivated through that process. And then maybe, as in this case, this poem, maybe in our reading it and hearing it, some of that is then shared. It's another way of radiating the Brahma-vihara. So it gets radiated through, you know, it's been published and other people can read it and maybe resonate it and be helped. So this is a poem called The Healing Time by Pesha Gertler. Finally, on my way to yes, I bump into all the places where I said no to my life. All the untended wounds, the red and purple scars, those hieroglyphs of pain carved into my skin, my bones, these coded messages that send me down the wrong street again and again. Where I find them, the old wounds, the old misdirections, and lift them one by one close to my heart, and I say, holy, holy. It's hard to follow that. So maybe maybe we can, just the last kind of thing to share and explore a bit together is a chant, chanting, singing. And I'd like to share a chant with you that some of you may recognise. It's a compassion chant that I created. And it's based on a compassion practice, a Kuan Yin or Avalokiteshvara, the embodiment of compassion, this statue which is just behind the screen. It's kind of based on a practice that Kittisara and Tanisara developed around that. Around that image, around that embodiment of compassion. And so, but I kind of adapted the words and created a tune, and I haven't shared it for a while, so we'll see if I can remember it properly. And we have a chanting room, and we have woods to singing. So if you are moved to chant or sing, sometimes we can sing compassion into the world, into our hearts. Yeah, it can happen. Okay, and then we'll close the talk. So do feel free to join in or not. Feel very free to not join in, to just listen. I always want to say that because I know what it's like. You sit there and I don't want to join in. It's like, it's fine. You don't have to. Okay. Resting deeply, I return my life to the one who listens deeply to the sounds of the world. Resting deeply, I return my life to the one who listens deeply to the sounds of the world. Resting deeply, I return my life to the one who listens deeply to the sounds of the world. Resting deeply, I return my life to the one who listens deeply to the sounds of the world. Resting deeply, I return my life to the one who listens deeply to the sounds of the world. Resting deeply, I return my life to the one who listens deeply to the sounds of the world. Okay, one more time. Resting deeply, I return my life to the one who listens deeply to the sounds of the world. Thank you, friends.